It's a pleasure to be here today, and I want to talk about public service and public interest. They are often in the same breath, and many of the attributes of public service working for the government or public interest working for a nonprofit are the same. I'll distinguish them from time to time, but generally talk about them because they're far more similar than they are different. I want to talk about today why I urge each of you who are starting your careers to think about it. You are fortunate to come to a law school where you have many, many opportunities, and you have real choices in how you're going to spend your time once you graduate. And I want to talk about why I did the things I did and why I think you would enjoy doing them as well. My story begins, as many stories begin, with going to a law firm. I ended up in a law firm in New York, and as a result of my ending up in the law firm, I met my wife, with whom I've been married for 40-plus years, and I always tell students that your first law firm job is really important, but in ways that you will never realize. So think about that. Anyway, I was there for a while, and I decided I was going to go be an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, and I got a job in the civil division. Most people are not aware that the government has civil divisions, but they turned out to be extraordinarily interesting. I really liked the work, and I'm going to tell you why a little bit later. I decided that I was going to eventually move on. I had been there almost 4 years. I decided I could not go back to a large law firm and I had too much responsibility. I didn't want to go to a smaller firm that was in the commercial area because people were mostly moving money around and that didn't interest me. I had a real taste for public policy. I wanted to care about the cases I worked on, and so that's what I decided I was going to do. And while I left the government to go to work for Public Citizen, the jobs were much more similar than they were different and much closer to each other than would be going to work for a large law firm. So why was I so happy in these jobs? The first reason is I think I went to law school in significant part because I saw the law as intellectually stimulating. There are lots of lawyers today who have jobs in which they are pushing paper around and doing things by rote that they've done time and time again, for whom the job is not much in the way of satisfaction. There was enormous intellectual stimulation at both of my jobs. In the U.S. Attorney's Office, you represented the government in all kinds of civil cases. We had contract cases, we had tort cases, but whenever the government was involved, there was always some wrinkle that was a little different, made it more complicated and more challenging. The government was involved in bankruptcy cases, and I didn't know very much about bankruptcy law, and I had to supervise a bunch of lawyers who did it and had a couple of cases. But the government was in the middle because the first thing that happens when people get into financial trouble is they don't pay the government. And so the government had interest in every one of these cases, and it was a fascinating way to learn about all that area of the law. And then most of our work was defending federal programs and challenges to the constitutionality of the statutes. Extraordinarily interesting and vital from a public policy perspective. Now, when I left and went to Public Citizen, there was one big change. The substance was largely the same, but we were on the offense instead of on the defense. And to be on the offense, you've got to be a lot more creative, because instead of somebody suing you, you sue somebody else. And before that, you've got to figure out whether there's a problem or not. Sometimes you don't even know there's a problem. People come to you, they've got a problem, but they have no idea. We don't have a tax department. We don't have an antitrust department. We don't have a securities department. We have a constitutional law department. We had to do all of those things ourselves. And so we had to figure out what the issues were and could we do anything about them. So let me just give you an example of an area in which we spent a lot of our time that nobody had done anything about before we started doing it. And that was the area about the regulation of the legal profession. People thought of the regulation of the legal profession as affecting lawyers. But we quickly understood that these regulations had enormous impact on consumers, people who needed legal services and couldn't find them or couldn't afford them if they found them. So we went after things like minimum fee schedules, the rules on advertising, challenges to residence requirements for bar admission, which were plainly protectionist, designed to keep lawyers from other states out and from competing, and with the restrictions on the unauthorized practice of law. In every one of these areas, we had to break new ground by figuring out the applicability of the antitrust laws, the First Amendment, the Privileges and Immunities Clause, and due process in areas that had never been done before. This was a truly unique opportunity that you find only in the kind of work that we were doing there. Now, even in public service for the government, there are opportunities to be creative as well. I think that the efforts of the Food and Drug Administration to try to regulate tobacco were one of the great efforts, and even though they failed, they did a wonderful public service by trying. So, for example, nobody had thought that you could regulate tobacco. Indeed, the Food and Drug Administration for years had told Congress, we have no authority to do it. And some very clever lawyers and some very clever scientists and policy people started to look at it again, and they said, let's don't think about it as tobacco. Let's think about it as nicotine. And nicotine is a drug, and we have the authority to regulate drugs. In addition, cigarettes deliver nicotine, and we have the authority under the Medical Device Amendment to regulate the delivery of drugs to human beings, and therefore, literally, they come within the statute. Now, in the end, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that the FDA was wrong. But the point I want to make here today is that it's the opportunity for creative lawyering working for the government that can be found in public service as well as public interest. We used to say at Public Citizen that if the case was easy, we wouldn't do it because there was almost no point in doing it. Certainly was true after a while. In the beginning, we had to sue the government. The government just simply disregarded statutes, in part because nobody was there to sue them over. There were laws that said you had to have open public hearings. They didn't pay any attention. You had to give notice to the public. They didn't pay any attention. After a while, they finally woke up to the notion that you had to pay attention to the laws because people were going to sue you. So the easy cases were gone. This, of course, meant that one of the real problems was that you had to lose cases, and we lost a number of cases. But if we weren't trying, if we weren't pressuring the outer borders, then we weren't doing our jobs. The other thing I found out about losing cases is sometimes losing cases, in fact, most of the time, losing cases hurts more than in winning cases feel good. Because when you win a case, you say, oh, we were right from the beginning, that's all right. When you lose a case, you say, how can that possibly be? We were right and we still lost the case. But in many times, you brought cases, you litigated them, you lost, and that set the stage for making a policy change in another arena, be it the Congress or some other opportunity. So that's the first reason that I love the practice of what I have done. And by the way, it's my first reason, but it doesn't have to be yours. And actually, I never really tried to tally them up and see which one would be first if I had to rank them. But the second reason, and I think this is the reason that most people go to work for the government or for nonprofit organizations, is because you care about what you're doing, that you care about the outcome of the people you are representing, the causes that you believe in. Most lawyers do not have the luxury of being able to do that. They work in an office where they're assigned cases. They do what they're expected to do. I thought that all the time that I was working, I was making the world better. I probably wasn't, but I thought that way, at least, and it made me feel good. Not that I had any grand vision, because you really don't, but that I was incrementally making the world a little bit better for at least some groups of people. And, of course, this is true for most government lawyers. They believe, prosecutors, government lawyers in general, and, of course, defenders in the criminal justice system as well, that they are making the world better by doing their job properly. If you care about your work, then you really need to have that high on your list of things that you're thinking about doing. Third, the ability to choose what you want to do. And choice has two aspects, both positive and negative. The negative aspect is You don't have to work on things you don't want to work on. You don't have to work on behalf of clients you don't believe in. You generally don't have to work on matters that are boring and are done because somebody has to do them in the organization. We occasionally had to do that. But by and large, you don't have to say no. Now, in most law firms, you can say no once in a while. But you can't say no very often if you expect to keep your job, because after all, that's not your job there to make choices. Somebody else is making the choices. And so our opportunity was to say we could make these choices. But the second and perhaps most important, and this was much more true at Public Citizen than it was in the government, is that you actually get to decide affirmatively what you want to work on. When we started the organization, we didn't have any mission. We didn't have any list of things that we had to do. We decided that we wanted to work on the legal profession. We decided we were interested in separation of powers. As matters got on, we worried about federal preemption of state laws. We worried about selling out in class actions. We worried about lots of other things that nobody else was worrying about, because those were the things that interested us and that we cared about and we wanted to make an impact on. The opportunity to work on what you want to do is an opportunity that very few people get in their lives, and I feel terribly blessed to have had that opportunity for so many years. Now, the next opportunity we had, and that is to work in a broad subject area. Many people today who work for law firms are required, because of the economics of the legal profession and because of the complexity of the law, to specialize in very, very narrow areas. Some of my friends do this, and they love it. I find, on the other hand, that the opportunity to work in a wide range of different fields, doing constitutional law one day, antitrust the next, administrative law one day, suing over getting government records the day after that, the great variety is an opportunity that most people don't have. It's not true in all nonprofit organizations. Some are more narrowly confined than ours. But at least the possibility is there as well. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is not talking about ends so much, but about means. And this is an opportunity that I've had at Public Citizen that's certainly true in the nonprofit world, but much less true in the government world. And that is, when we see a problem, we have the opportunity to try to find out ways to attack it using all the tools that we have as lawyers and as advocates in general. So let me give you an example on the legal profession. One of the things that we did when we started to worry about the legal profession was we got active as members of various committees and ultimately as a member of the Board of Governors of the District of Columbia Bar. We had an opportunity to affect programs, to make suggestions about how things should be done, to look at the ethics rules, the disciplinary rules, and all the things which affected the legal profession from the inside. And because we were one of relatively few public interest lawyers who were working on this, we were the kind of people that they were looking for when picking up these organizations. We then got to work on and go to meetings of the American Bar Association as they prepare their rules. We give talks. We write articles. We give speeches. We go to conventions. All of the kind of things that you get to do when you don't have to worry about billing your clients every moment, because we got paid for doing that. And when it was necessary, as it wasn't so much in the bar rules, but in other areas, we had to go lobby Congress. Not my favorite activity, but sometimes you have to do it. You give testimony, you write, you edit bills, you make suggestions. All of the whole bag of tools that a lawyer has, you as a public interest lawyer have the opportunity to use all of them. Some of these tools are available to government lawyers. There are committees that are always looking for government lawyers on them. People want to have programs with government lawyers. They want to have an opportunity to be heard and have their input, and so that's very important for government lawyers as well. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is something that many people do not associate with nonprofit organizations, but I do, and that is training. it is really important, and perhaps it should be higher up on my list of things to do. I know when you get done your 3 years of law school here and you've taken the bar exam, you think you know you're ready to practice law, but you really aren't. And it isn't just that you don't know anything, because you know a lot of things. And you know, problem is you don't know what to do with them. You don't know how to take the law that you can find in the books and translate them into documents, into briefs, and into legislation and other ideas. And you're going to learn that only by working with people who want to train you and going to take the time to train you and to teach you the thing that you do not have, which is judgment. That is, what do you do with all of these things that you've learned? How do you put them all together? And the only way to do that, the only way to learn to exercise your judgment, is by exercising your judgment, by actually practicing, by making decisions. I tell young lawyers when they come to work for me that what I want you to do when you get a problem, when the other side has done something, I want you to pretend that I'm not there in the room. And I want you to think about the problem and work through the solution. And then I want you to come in and see me and say, the government has done this and such and so. This is what I want to do. What do you think? Now, this is wonderful for me as a supervisor because, first place, it takes all the burden out of sorting all this stuff out. Second, it makes you actually practice the hardest thing to do, which is to sort out all of the information you have and then figure out which option you're going to do. And last, it puts me in the position of being able to ultimately say, well, look, this is not what we're going to do, and this is why we're not going to do it, or we're going to do it this way, but tweak it a little bit. And so the next time that you get a problem, you will have understood not just what the answer was, but how I got there and how you got there. So when you're looking for jobs, and by the way, this applies every place that you're going to look for a job, it's really important to find out what kind of training you have. It's a little bit like Goldilocks and Little Red Riding Hood, looking for the soup. Is it too hot, too cold, or not, or not just right? So is your training too hot, just right, or too cold? Do you get enough training? Some places you go and they say to you, you're in charge, don't worry about it, you'll do it. And actually you'll be surprised at how much you can do. But that's not really what you want. You want to find a place that's going to have good training. And one of the things that good public interest organizations have, and we prided ourselves on, was lots of hands-on training, lots of reviewing of the briefs, doing moot courts for people, going over it, and explaining what we did and why we did it. Now, the economics of law practice today do not allow or don't encourage this kind of activity in many, some, all law firms. Not sure what the right answer is to that. So the notion that you'll learn by osmosis, that just being around the great man or woman all this time, is not true. You don't learn things by writing memos and having somebody else write the brief. The question is, how do you get from the memos that you wrote into the briefs that become final? And you really learn by actually doing it. You'll be surprised how much you can actually do as long as you've got a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of backstopping and help. I always used to feel that my greatest accomplishments were not the cases that I argued, but the cases that I helped other people get ready to argue. And once they've done it, they can do it again, and they feel ennobled, and they feel empowered, and that's a terribly important part of their lives. Now, at Public Citizen, we had what we used to refer to as fringe benefits. Fringe benefits are often available when you don't have main benefits. Translated means pay. Unfortunately, the Safeway has not recognized our psychic income fringe benefit, and they insist on paying in cash. But we have other benefits as well. I don't underestimate the special problem that students have with coming out of law school with their debts. And for you, I say, you may not be able to start in a public service job, depending on loan forgiveness and other things like that. But it's really important to focus your attention not only on what you're doing now, but where you're going to be 2 or 3 years from now. To say to yourself, look, I can't start where I want to be, but I'm going to give myself a deadline. I'm not going to set up my lifestyle in a way that I will be unable to move someplace else when I get through paying off my debts. And it's very important to have a concrete goal with that in mind. So what are these fringe benefits? Well, they're also not vacations, and they're also not fancy offices. And it's more than just feeling good about your work, but you get invited to nice places like the University of Virginia to give talks. You get invited to foreign countries. You get invited to interesting symposiums. I became a part-time law teacher not because of anything else I did, but the fact that I had worked for Public Citizen, and the Harvard Law School decided they needed somebody for a year there to come with a different background and bring different experiences to the students, and I became a part-time law teacher for most of the next 30-something years. That never, ever would have happened if I had been at a law firm. I get invited to serve on boards and commissions and do all kinds of interesting things that would never have happened at all. I am a member of a panel of the National Academy of Sciences, which my friend Dick Merrill is the co-chair, which has been one of the most interesting experiences of my life, despite the fact that I know nothing about science and know a little bit about law. It's been absolutely fabulous, would never have happened without this kind of opportunity. And then I occasionally get to give talks in places where the audience is a little less friendly. When we were litigating the lawyer advertising cases, I was invited to give a talk at the Tennessee Bar Association. And the next set of cases that were coming along involved solicitation by lawyers. So I tried to give a talk which was going to be designed to explain why advertising was good, but solicitation, in which you conveyed information about particular services that you knew the person need, was actually even better. So I titled the talk, The Joy of Solicitation. And the audience did not think it was very funny. And at the end, one of the members of the bar came to me and said to me, young man, he said, you're a very brave man for coming down here and talking those kind of things to us here. They weren't ready for it, but it was worth doing anyway. And of course, it was nice to be occasionally on television, and your mother and father would see you there, and you would get to go argue occasionally in the Supreme Court, and your family would come down and watch you there, and the newspapers would call you up. And if you like that sort of thing, it's okay, too. But it is a kind of a fringe benefit, of at least from time to time. Then we had the fact that the people I worked with were absolutely wonderful. The work atmosphere was an atmosphere in which there was complete camaraderie, cooperation. There was no backbiting. There was no competition because there was nothing to compete for. The salaries were all set. They weren't very high. Nobody could go very far of any place. Cases were handed out on the basis of who was available and who knew something about them. Everybody cooperated with everybody else. If you were away, you got somebody to cover for you. When you had a brief that needed to be read by somebody else, people dropped what they were doing. People got ready for other people's moot courts. Whatever needed to be done was done. And having that kind of a work atmosphere, and it was largely true in the government as well, where it was everybody working together for a common goal, that's an incredibly wonderful part of your work life, and something that we should all strive to have. Last and not least, I'm going to say a word that you don't hear very much when people are interviewing for jobs at law firms, and that's fun. We actually had fun. One of my colleagues used to say, we really shouldn't get paid for doing this because it's so much fun. And I said to him, Reuben, I want to remind you, we don't get paid very much. And he said, I know, but we shouldn't even take that. I said, well, we probably should do that. And it was really fun. We laughed a lot. We poked fun at the government and at our corporate adversaries and everything else. And people looked forward to going to work. One of the problems was that most of us took on a lot more work than we probably, quote, should have taken on. But we took it on because we loved it, because we enjoyed the challenge, because we wanted to work on the problems. The difficulty we had was everybody kept seeing new things they wanted to work on. It wasn't that I was assigning everybody all this work all the time, and that's why people were working in there. They worked there because they really enjoyed it. And there's no reason why the word work should not have some fun to it as well. Now, I have a few words that I want to say to those of you who say, well, it's a nice idea, but it's not for me because I can't do it. Or public citizen is fine and U.S. Attorney's Office is fine, but they're not right for me. So my short answer to that is I am the co-editor of a book that I managed to produce with not quite slave labor, but student labor when I was teaching at Stanford. It's called Beyond the Big Law Firm, Profiles of Lawyers Who Want Something More. I get no royalties from it, so please don't think that I'm shilling the book for that reason. It's a book in which we profile 30 lawyers who have done work outside the big law firm context. There are prosecutors, public defenders, there are litigators, there are university counsels, there are government lawyers, there are people in small firms, there are employment discrimination lawyers, union lawyers, immigration lawyers, a whole range of people from a wide variety of law schools in different settings around the country, coasts, small towns, big cities, you name it, it's all there. And what you realize when you finish reading the book, the students, we designed the project, and the students went out, interviewed, and wrote the chapters on their interviews, and then we edited them. But what you see in every one of these interviews is how much each of these people liked getting up in the morning and going to work and doing what they were doing. And they were doing extraordinarily different things. And the book is important because it illustrates to anybody who says, well, I don't know what I would really do, or I don't want to do this, or litigation is not right for me, or whatever else it is, that there are many, many choices out there for you. So don't think you're narrowed in that connection. Second thing I want to say is what I said before, which is you don't have to decide now how you're going to spend the rest of your career. You have plenty of options. It used to be in the practice of law that people went to a law firm. If they made partner, they stayed there the rest of their lives. If they didn't, they went to someplace else and stayed there the rest of their lives. People didn't move around, didn't change jobs, with very few exceptions. Not true anymore, nor should it be true. There's too many different and interesting and exciting things to do in the practice of law, and you should be out there looking for them all the time. You should do that if you're at a firm. Connect up with the nonprofit organization. See what they're doing. The easiest way to get into something else is by getting into it on a part-time, a pro bono basis. People get to know you. You get to know them. And when the jobs come up, they're more likely to look to somebody that they know has done work and they can rely on than going out and looking for somebody else. As I say, the third is you don't need to do this on a full-time basis. There are lots of organizations that need part-time pro bono. Law firms are, to some extent, and should be to a greater extent, encouraging lawyers to do that, and it's an important way to spend your time. So I want to come back to where I started, which is that I've been extraordinarily lucky in my career, but it's not just me. Everyone in this room can find similar kinds of opportunities if you keep your eyes open and you're ready to take a chance and to take a step forward from time to time. Just recently, one of my top students that I taught was all set to go back to California. And his girlfriend had accepted a job. They were both in Washington. They were going to go back to California. And she had already gone back there And he had worked on the Obama campaign, and he got an offer to go to work in an important job. It's not so important, but it's a job in the administration. And he was tossing and turning around about what to do about this. Obviously, the partner involvement made it somewhat more complicated. And I said to him, and this is the advice I give to my students, I said, think about it 5 years from now. Which job will you kick yourself in the backside for not taking? And that's the job you should take now. That you will never regret it. And that's the question is, which job are you going to regret not taking? When you come out of UVA law school, there'll be plenty of time to go to work for that law firm, or to go to work in some corporation. Think about the ways that you can find that will be most fulfilling to you. And that's my message. Now all you have to do is go out and execute it. Thank you very much.